Jimmy Show Mission, two men, one podcast, every black film ever made. My name is Len, a.k.a. the Bat Tribble. And as always, I am joined by my partner.
Hey, this is Vincent Williams.
Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we are continuing in the month of April, which means Octavia April, where we celebrate films that have a touch of Afrofuturism in them, all in honor of the late great science fiction novelist Octavia Butler. And tonight we have a grand film for you, brought to you by Vincent. It's from 2023 and from Netflix. Jamie Foxx, Tiana Paris, and John Boyega in They Cloned Tyrone. Tonight's stop on the Michaud Mission, ladies and gentlemen, in a film that was directed by Jewel Taylor and written by Tony Rittenmeyer, as well as Jewel Taylor. Can't wait to get into this film, which was, I believe, I voted as my favorite film of 2023.
Look, man, it's like the reverse of episodes where we don't really want to get to the movie. We kind of lollygag. Let's do the stuff.
Let's get right
and get to it.
Get right to it, ladies and gentlemen. But before we do, we want to give a shout out to each and every one of you that are out there watching us live as we stream to YouTube from Yunk Junk, Philadelphia's premier video podcast palace here in Manayunk, PA. Go to Dylan at yunkjunk.com if you want to book yourself in one of the fabulous studios here. We are streaming to Twitter. We are streaming to Facebook. And of course, we are streaming to YouTube, where you are watching us in the chat. Hello, missionaries.
Good evening, one and all.
All right, Vincent, I know you want to get right to it.
Having said that, I have to contradict myself immediately, though. I do want to give a shout out to A Tribe Called Quest.
A Tribe Called Quest, which was one of the nominees.
I thought they were actually inducted.
Oh, that's right. They're going to be inducted.
They are inducted.
They're going to be inducted to this year's class of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right. I infamously do not give credence to these things, but I do love seeing people get their flowers.
Yeah.
And A Tribe Called Quest is my favorite group of all times.
Like your favorite group of of music.
Low End Theory is my desert island.
Really?
Yep.
That's interesting.
Yep. So anything that celebrates A Tribe Called Quest makes me happy.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy for them, especially, you know, I think many of us are still very sad about the death of Fife.
But a well-deserved honor.
I'm going to take a second to shout out Tribe. So can I kick it?
Yes, you can.
All right.
You just tickled Dylan.
I know. I just tickled a bunch of people.
You sure did. People are like, yes, you can. Yes, you can. We're going to get like 20 emails. Yes, you can.
Yes, you can.
Kick it, man. Kick it. I hear you, bro. I hear you. I don't want to get us off on too crazy a tangent.
Sure.
But here comes one.
Okay.
So this weekend, as you know, I celebrated my birthday.
I know.
I went to like a game night at my sister's house.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun. Had a great time. Yeah,
I'm sorry I missed that.
Yeah, but we were sorry that you missed it as well, because everybody was like, where's Vincent?
I'm sure,
like,
of course.
He's busy, can't make it.
That is always the question.
Yeah, dude, like, I don't think people really want me at these parties.
Absolutely. They're just looking for you.
Just looking over their shoulder for you. So anyway.
Now, for the record, half the conversations I had before my dad passed was him yelling at me about something that I said that he disagreed with and I should listen to you. So it balances out.
It does.
So, all right, go ahead. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Mr. Williams.
I listened to y'all's show and I just wanted to say to you, here we go.
Nice to know there's a smart Williams.
Right.
Dealing with you. Your brother. So anyway, we were having fun and we're playing like a game.
Yahtzee, Connect Four.
No.
Hunger,
I think
Hippo,
it's like had Candyland. You ever or would you ever? Would you ever?
All right.
Right? And a question came up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I want to pose the question to you.
Okay. All right.
For $3 million.
Okay.
Tax free.
Mm-hmm.
$3 million.
Yes.
Would you give up having sex for the rest of your life?
No.
Well, there you go. There's the answer. Well, that was easy. That was a 20-minute debate on Saturday.
All right.
People just like, well, wait, what do you mean by sex? Because then it got into a debate of whether or not masturbation is sex.
This is quite the left turn we've taken. Like, when you said tangent, I thought we were going to end up talking about, you know, that season of The Dukes of Hazzard, where they brought in the cousins who looked a little bit like Bo and Duke.
Mm-hmm.
When Tom Wompat and
John Schneider,
and we're holding out for more salary, and then they just replaced them with some cousins who looked just like them.
Right.
And then when they settled the season after that, they brought them back.
Right.
And we all pretended that season with the off-brand cousins
never happened.
But you went somewhere.
I went totally the other side of the rainbow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we could probably move on to something else now. See, a fire needs fuel and oxygen. I tried to take both away.
Well done.
See how I did that?
Well done. Because you got me onto another train
there
of thought by bringing up the Dukes of Hazzard.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who was first cast before Tom Wompat and John Schneider in the Dukes of Hazzard?
I did not.
It was, in fact, Dennis Quaid.
Is that true?
Yes. He was actually given, and he they wanted him so much, he was given the option of which role do you want to play? But I forget what movie he was up for. He was up for a movie at the time.
I didn't even know Dennis Quaid was famous like that.
Well, he wasn't.
Like, he was like a comedian.
Dennis Quaid's not a comedian.
Not Dennis Quaid. I'm sorry.
You're thinking about Randy. And
Right. Yeah.
No, he's an actor.
No.
And
yeah,
he was
a young
actor.
Right, young actor
at the time.
Yeah.
And he was up for a role in a movie at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget who he said... told him, like, you know, hey, that's a good job, this TV thing, but do you really want to do TV or do you want to do the movies?
Right.
And, you know, at that time, you know, if you were either a movie star or a TV star.
I mean, I think he made the right choice.
I believe he made the right choice as well. But I could have definitely saw him when he said that. I could have seen a young Dennis Quaid as one of the Duke brothers.
I think he has too much heft.
Too much heft.
As an actor. Like, I think everybody on the Dukes of Hazzard was very superficial, very kind of, you know.
Okay.
You know, Boss Hogg was clearly the heavyweight talent on there.
I mean,
then everyone else just kind of orbited around
Vincent,
him.
Even Tom Hanks did Bosom Buddies. I mean, sometimes you do stuff
And when you watch Bosom Buddies, you're drawn immediately to Tom Hanks.
And I think if Dennis Quaid was in Dukes of Hazzard, you'd have been drawn to Dennis Quaid.
It would pull you away from everything else that was going on.
What the hell else was going on in Dukes of Hazzard?
It was really light. It was cars
and
Daisy had on little shorts.
He wouldn't have pulled you away from that.
Waylon Jennings was on and... You know,
there was nothing pulling you away from Daisy.
I am glad that it went the way it went.
I'm sure he is, right, too.
But that's an interesting factoid.
I thought it was as well.
All right. And happy belated birthday. I mean, I said happy birthday.
You said happy birthday.
But publicly, happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
Glad you had a good one.
We had a good time.
Yeah.
Had a very good time. All right, let's get into our show, ladies and gentlemen, mm-hmm. which means we're going to get into your emails.
All right.
Or as we like to call them...
Missives from the missionaries.
So what else is going on, Lynn?
We have emails, Vincent.
Ooh, missives from the missionaries. Ooh. 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 Missives from the
missives. Let's try that again. Okay. Missives from the missionaries, ladies and gentlemen. We have an email, Vincent, from Amber Viola.
What's up, Amber?
Hey, this has become one of my favorite podcasts.
Thank you.
I consider myself a movie buff, and I love both movies and television. When I started listening to your podcast, I realized I had a blind spot for black movies.
Okay, then you're in the right place.
Growing up, we weren't allowed to watch anything that had sex, violence, or a lot of profanity, which sadly took out many black movies.
She was going to say we weren't allowed to watch things with black people in them.
I thought that's where it was going.
I grew up in, let's call it a religious community in the Pacific Northwest in Oregon. Woo! I'm glad that letter didn't go the way I thought it was going to go. All right. Welcome, Amber.
Our television was edited for African Americans.
I follow Branford Marsalis on Twitter, and he posted like one of the ratings for a documentary that we both enjoyed. They called him Morgan.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And under the you know it was like rated for mature audiences, and it had all the things in it that it had. It said like alcohol use, profanity, and then it said jazz. Watching all that jazz, you fool around the. White girls would be smoking marijuana cigarettes and going out with Negro men. Amber, I hope you are good-natured about all of this. It'd be a shame she just came in a week. But please continue.
Amber continues. As I've gotten older, I've been watching for the first time so many black movies, and it has made me fall in love with cinema all over again.
Nice.
Listening to your podcast has definitely given me many more movies to watch. When you guys talk about your favorite movies by black actors, either I hadn't seen them or I had a completely different favorite movie from that actor.
Fair.
Listening to your take on Book of Eli got me thinking about my favorite Denzel movie. Mm. The first movie that came to mind was Fallen. I'm a huge horror fan, and that is my favorite genre. There are not a ton of black actors in horror, so when I see one, I want to watch their entire filmography.
Okay.
Thank you so much for opening my eyes to so many more black films. I live in Scranton.
Okay,
and
nice.
We have a nice size horror festival every year. This year, Tony Todd is going to be here.
Yes,
I think you guys should definitely make the drive up to the Poconos and come to our horror festival. Thank you, Amber Viola. Politics, but make it fashion. Tony Todd, who was a quite some time ago a guest.
Yeah,
An extremely special episode of the Michelle Mission.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And someone who I've come across, run across a couple of times. We've had good times, share some time.
Good dude.
With Tony, a very good dude.
Good dude.
Hard dude to nail down for the show. I've been trying to get him for Halloween, like sure. Almost every year.
Sure.
And it's hard to get him for Halloween. So
of course.
Yeah. So I think it's one of those situations where you got to try and book him ahead of time and then just record it.
Yeah.
Like, we got you recording it. And then
right.
Because now he does voice work all over the
place. Yeah.
But he's definitely a good dude.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do like Scranton.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
He's got a really cool comic shop up there.
Do that?
Yeah.
All right. Well, mm-hmm. Then maybe we'll make the
maybe.
Trip.
Maybe. Well, thank you, Amber.
But thank you, Amber, for that email. We have an email from Nicole Sherman.
What's up, Nicole?
Hi, Len and Vince, or should I say the LV happy hour?
Ooh.
I first want to start off by saying I'm excited you guys are finally reviewing The Clone Tyrone, one of the best films of 2023.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This weekend, I rewatched the beloved, influential, timeless classic Coolie High.
Mm.
Man, what a journey that was. An almost 50-year-old movie that still seems fresh through a 2024 critical lens. After watching the movie, it made me think of how innovative black films are over the decades. Every decade up to the point, 2024, had a film or films that were original and fresh. Take Coolie High and Foxy Brown of the 70s. Do the Right Thing of the 80s. The Watermelon Woman, Daughters of the Dust, Just Another Girl on the IRT, Boys in the Hood, and Menace to Society for the 90s. Pariah for the early 2010s. I love how the black narrative shifts every decade to give us something that has never been seen before. Before I go, I need help deciding what I should watch in May.
Oh, boy.
I am debating between black satirical spoof films, a month on Eddie Murphy movies, or black books turned into movies. I am dedicating June for Spike Lee in honor of the 35th anniversary of Do the Right Thing. Looking forward to your thoughts from a fellow missionary, Nicole.
I mean,
black satirical or spoof films, a month of Eddie Murphy movies, or black books turned into movies.
I think you're headed in the summer. I would say black satirical films.
Such as?
Don't Be a Menace to South Central. What else would I do? Putney Swope.
Putney Swope's a good one.
Bamboozle.
That could take her into her June of Spike Lee. Right.
Maybe end with Bamboozle.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
CB4.
CB4, which we've not reviewed.
No, we haven't.
Yeah. In fact, drop.
Bamboozle?
No, drop.
Don't be a menace.
And go ahead and throw in.
CB4.
No, CB4 with.
Hootie Tang.
What's not Men Without Hats?
Oh, it's. Is it Men Without Hats?
It's not Men Without Hats.
Men Without Hats.
Don't be a menace.
It's CB4.
It's CB4, and then it's the other one.
I know the one you're talking about. We did it.
Yeah.
And I see. I can't pull it up.
I'm drawing a blank, too. This does not bode well for Fear of a Black Hat.
Fear of a Black Hat.
Right. It doesn't bode well for. Irvo Martin.
That was a little rough right there.
I can't be having brain farts this early.
So Fear of a Black Hat before Don't Be a Menace.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So Fear of a Black Hat, CB4.
Putney Swope. Bamboozle.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
That's a good month.
That's a good month, Nicole. And thank you for your email.
Yes, thank you, Nicole. Have a good month. You have to report back to class and tell us what you think.
We have an email, Vincent, from Michael Sykes.
What's up, Michael?
Hello, Vincent, and happy belated birthday, Len. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Hope you had. I have two questions. Number one is right up your alley.
All right.
Why did the Brothers Johnson stop talking? I am a fan of their albums, such as Look Out for Number One, Right on Time, Blam, and Light Up the Night. I did not know that they stopped talking.
I don't know. So we'll start there. And I don't want to be arrogant and say, because I don't know, no one knows. But I don't know how much I've ever heard people talk about. It's sort of like what happened. I mean,
but is it known that they historically
it's sort of like the Hines brothers, where they stopped speaking, but no one ever really talks about why.
Mm.
So I don't know. Well, I'll just say I don't know why the Brothers Johnson stopped speaking.
Okay.
Because I'm like, I want to say money. But I might be mixing them up with the Troutman brothers.
I have no idea.
Like, I know Roger Troutman and the Zap people fell out over money. But yeah.
Second question.
Glad I could be helpful.
I've been into movies like Devil in a Blue Dress and A Rage in Harlem. I want to know, are there any more modern day African-American crime noir films set in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. Your fan, Michael Sykes. Well, Devil in a Blue Dress, Rage in Harlem. First one that comes to my mind is I just lost it. The Lawrence Fishburne movie. Is it Hoodlum?
Would you call that noir?
Well, it's a crime film set in that time.
Yeah.
Crime film set in that time.
Another film that somehow we haven't
Cut. A Rage Up in Harlem.
Yeah, Rage in Harlem isn't noir. Really noir. Yeah, so yeah, Hoodlum.
Yeah, Hoodlum. I don't think of another one.
I'm just scrolling through my head thinking about black men in them cool hats.
I feel like there's a blaxploitation one that was kind of
period piecey.
Yeah, maybe not.
Right, blaxploitation period pieces were few and far between.
Too expensive.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, if we're going to do Chester Himes, it's not a period piece, but you could spend a worse time than watching Cotton Comes to Harlem.
That's true. The early part of the beginning of Malcolm X.
Yeah. And Come Back Charleston Blue isn't the best movie, but
no.
It's got that great Donny Hathaway soundtrack.
Yeah, that's true. The only other thing that I would recommend is
Chester Himes stuff.
Is the I think it was a Starz TV series, Godfather of Harlem. With
No, that's with Forrest Whitaker.
Forrest Whitaker.
Which I've never watched.
I watched the first season of it.
Here you go, Lynn. This is a reference to a conversation we were having before we start taping. The reason I haven't watched it, isn't it all like Epics?
Yeah, it's Epics.
That's a channel I don't have.
It's the one channel.
I don't.
You've got every other channel.
I got every, but I don't have.
And cable.
But I don't have Epics. So somehow I've never seen The Godfather of Harlem. There you go, Lynn. That's where I put my foot down.
That's where you put your foot down.
That's where I put my
Epics
foot.
Epics and BET Plus.
In Cinemax.
But Godfather of Harlem, I did watch the first season of that. That was good.
And I've heard nothing but good things about
it. That's a period.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about it.
So there you go. That's my recommendation for you, Michael. Mm-hmm. All right. I think we got a couple more emails. We have an email from Michael Lockett.
Hey, what's up, Michael?
What's up, brothers? Before I discuss what's stuck in my craw, let me first tell you about my mission time travels, which was exceptional.
Okay.
I initially listened to the podcast and watched Imitation of Life from 1937.
Nice.
In its context, this film is really well done. To me, it feels very much like how one and maybe both of you ID'd at various points in the podcast, black people guest starring in a film that should be centered on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very true. That said, I think everyone should see it. It's more powerful than the 59 one, much more powerful than the 59 one, which is why I have not been moved to get to the 59 one at all since we've, because we haven't reviewed it yet.
We haven't reviewed it. I think I might have to disagree with both of y'all. I think I like the 59 one better because, you know, ironically, the character is played by a white actress, so she has more agency and is able to actually do something.
Yeah, but
as opposed to, you know, we talk about like okay. Poor Freddie Washington isn't allowed to be near any white people.
Even though the movie's about her.
They kind of keep her balkanized over on the side behind counters and stuff.
Michael continues. I was also talked right out of, and then right into again, watching Needle in a Time Stack.
Mm.
I agree. Nick of Time would have been a much better title.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This film had so many places it could have gone with gusto. One, a true battle of one-upmanship. Two, complete and utter madness caused by time travel mixed with love. Mm-hmm. Or three, playing up how real connections between people are so strong that time and space cannot contain them, which is what I thought it was going to really land on, but it unfortunately didn't. Unfortunately, we didn't get enough of any of these within a very interesting premise.
Okay.
Now for what's stuck in my craw.
Let's unstick your craw.
Oh, boy. Is Len's fatwa list complete? It seems a bit thin. Currently, it seems like the following.
Okay.
Jim Kelly.
Jim Kelly, yes.
Play of Kid and Play.
Play of Kid and Play.
Ty Mock.
Ty Mock.
Melvin Van Peebles.
Melvin Van Peebles.
Buttercup of the Powerpuff Girls.
Buttercup of the Powerpuff Girls. Yeah. Those on Lynn's enemies list.
I don't think there's any more enemies on there. Would you?
Maybe not any I'm going to say on air.
Oh, yeah. We can't say that one.
Right. Right. Harry Belafonte was on the list.
He was on the list.
He was. He is. Past tense.
Yes. I am fully in the bag for right. Harry right. Belafonte.
You listen to the early years of Lynn and Harry Belafonte had some type of weird falling out too. But
I've come around.
He's come around.
Come around on Harry Belafonte.
Yeah.
I don't see me making a similar journey on play. Or Ty Mock. Or Jim Kelly. All right. And I got respect for Melvin Van Peebles.
It's real begrudging.
Anyway. Also, regarding the top five, the blackest Justice League assembled, Cyborg, Static, Black Dynamite, Garnet, and Fillmore, being that you ruled out Craig of the Creek and John Stewart, would you consider replacing any of those on the list with Afro Samurai or Luke Cage? No. Here's the reason why. Luke Cage was not animated.
Exactly.
So I think he may have shown up in a couple of Spider-Man. Yeah, that's right. I think like a young Luke Cage was in like a Spider-Man one, but that was young Luke Cage. And nobody cares about young Luke Cage.
Yeah.
So no. So as far as I'm concerned, he was not animated.
Mm-hmm.
And Afro Samurai does not play well with others. Mm. So no.
Can I poke the bear real quick?
Sure.
I was always underwhelmed by Afro Samurai.
The show?
Mm-hmm.
Me too.
Oh, so we're both poking him.
Yeah. I appreciate it being
too much sizzle, not enough steak.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Just didn't do it for me.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. But thank you, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And we have one more email, Vincent.
Okay.
And this is from our good friend, George Carbona.
Hey, George.
Gents and missionaries. It's been 3 weeks of me trying to catch up. This adulting stuff keeps getting in the way, so cut me off if it goes too long.
All right.
Len, you and I were on the same page with Gabrielle Union. Vince, a closed mouth don't get fed. Ask that woman on. Really dug your top five sci-fi books. I recently added Dread Nation to my reading queue, but for the Star Wars fans, she's done a few High Republic books as well.
Okay.
Before reading Masters of Jin, the D is silent. Yes, I know. I'd recommend The Haunting of Tramcar 015. It takes place in the same alternate history. And I love Rosewater. I've pitched it to other folks as a sci-fi easy Rawlings.
Oh, nice.
And that's all you need to say.
Just pitched it to me.
To answer your question about Osmosis Jones, it wasn't cocaine. They were doing that spice. Eyes all blue. That's a good point.
There you go.
The creator. Yeah, I felt a bit let down with this one. It is visually stunning, but meh with the characters and story. The analogy of the Chosen One is spot on. I went with the Luke Skywalker Death Star angle at the end. John David Washington felt a bit off here. I like his work and think that he shines best when he gets to be charming and charismatic, and there wasn't enough of it here. Book of Eli was it opposite day and I missed it? You two need to sit down with a spreadsheet of the movies to record your stats. It's been a while since I saw this movie, but I do know that I generally enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I really dig action Denzel.
Mm-hmm.
And Vince, why stop there with the spoilers? Rosebud was a sled.
It was.
Vader is Luke's father.
He is.
And Einhorn was a man.
Yeah.
Jokes aside, this is why I love this podcast. It helps me in elevating how I look at movies, so I'll be rewatching this soon. Trying to wrap this up, I was able to squeeze Needle in a Time Stack in and listen to your review while putting a dresser together for my mom.
Nice.
Top five, Calderon from Young Justice Can't Get Any Love. That's a good pull.
That's a good pull, actually.
That is a good pull.
Yeah, that's a good pull, actually.
That's a good pull.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why he didn't make it.
Because it's a stupid haircut.
I didn't mind the haircut. I hate his haircut. I know you didn't like the haircut. I know you were not a fan of the haircut. But his arc, I didn't believe. Like, when they made him, like, we're getting geeky here, ladies and gentlemen. Right. On the TV show, cartoon show, Young Justice, when they made Calderon the leader of the team because he was technically older than Dick Grayson's Robin, that made sense, right? But I didn't think he was a good leader.
Okay.
Then he ages out and he becomes the Aquaman of the Justice League.
Yeah.
Okay. You become the Aquaman of the Justice League because you aged into Aquaman. But you can't tell me that you were still so good that they made you the leader of the Justice League too.
You know, it's kind of like, it's not about being good. I think you see this sometimes at my job, actually, where there are more senior people in the department, but it gets to the point where this isn't a position of prestige. This is a position that kind of somebody has to do. So you look around,
the senior people
and it
do
turns
it.
Into everybody's putting their finger on their nose going, not it.
Okay.
So, like, yeah, clearly Batman could have ran it, and I got a lot going on. And then Green Arrow, well, shit, I got a lot going on, too. Well, we all got a lot going on. How about the young boy?
How about the young Aqua Buck?
Right, let him. All right, fine. You run it.
You hear the keys.
Right, that's how I looked at it.
All right, well, that's why I didn't pick.
All right.
All right, but he would have been a good pull.
Yeah.
I'll recognize that. And George continues, I kind of like Needle in a Time Stack. I think that the stark nature of the film is a problem. It's not just the Billy Joel glass house, the unnamed city, the open space, the train, and why were they on a train? I'm sure there is some type of ride sharing service they could have used. Also, I feel like they were the only two black people around. Last, I think Janine did have a bit of agency. She gives him a video to help him remember, and when they reconnect, she's eyeballing him to say something. But bottom line, it was okay. Watch it for the performances. Nanu Nanu, George Kimona.
All right.
Yeah, but you're saying that she has agency in the last scene of the movie.
It's true.
And I mean, it is literally the last 10 seconds of the movie.
It is.
So, no, I can't go right with you on that one, George. But nice try. All right.
Thank you, George.
Thank you, George. And thank you, every one of you, for your emails. If you want to have your emails read on the show, or if you don't want them read, because we get plenty that we don't read, send them to michaumission@gmail.com. That's michaumission at gmail.com. Before we continue with the show, I want to make a big announcement to each and every one of you out there watching us as we are streaming live to YouTube. And for those who are listening to the podcast, to make you aware that the Be Real Me Show screening series has finally took us a minute, but it's finally nailed down our film for the second part of the series that will be screening on Thursday, June 13th at Bryn Mawr Film Institute, as Vincent and I and our good friend Stephanie Watts will be sitting down with hopefully all of you to watch The Five Heartbeats.
Five Heartbeats on the big screen.
On the big screen. And you know, you ain't seen The Five Heartbeats on a big screen in a long time.
Yeah,
and
you ever have. And it plays different.
It plays totally different
on a big screen. It really does.
Yes.
So please, if you can, Join us.
Tickets are on sale right now at BrynMawrFilm.org. BrynMawrFilm.org. That's BrynMawr Film.org. Thursday, June 13th for The Five Heartbeats.
Yeah.
Nights like this.
Yeah, my friends. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is going to be a night. It's going to be a night. And we want to see you in the building.
Got nothing but love for you, baby.
Now, it is time for us to move into the top five.
Top five. Who's your top five?
Vincent?
Yes.
Is there a heart? Is there a heart in the house tonight?
Stand up. Okay, yes.
Top five, ladies and gentlemen, where I give Vincent a list and he gives us his scintillating commentary on it. Keeping it in theme, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to be reviewing from 2023, They Cloned Tyrone.
They Cloned Tyrone?
Tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And Vincent?
Yes.
I'm putting you to the test. You have a decision to make.
All right.
Yay or nay.
Yay or nay to
these five Tyrones.
Five Tyrones.
Are they worthy of being cloned or not?
Should we clone these five Tyrones?
These Tyrones.
Who is Tyrone number one or five?
Tyrone number five.
Okay.
Is Tyrone Hornay.
Okay.
Are you familiar with Tyrone Hornay?
I am not.
I didn't think so. Tyrone Hornay was a star of the second half of the 1977 animated series Baggy Pants and the Nitwits. Now, Baggy Pants was a cat who walked around pretty much dressed like Charlie Chaplin. And he didn't talk, and he got into Charlie Chaplin-esque adventures on the first half of this animated series.
Mm-hmm.
The second half of the animated series was The Nitwits.
Mm-hmm.
The Nitwits is about an elderly superhero named Tyrone Hornay, who was voiced by Artie Johnson of Laugh-In fame.
Well, of course.
Who, by public demand, reemerges from retirement to fight crime, taking cases at his own discretion with the help of his wife, Gladys.
Sure.
Who was voiced by Ruth Buzzy.
I mean, who else would it be voiced by?
And his hopping cane that he called Elmo, and upon which he and Gladys would fly around from adventures to adventure.
Sure. So first of all, no, I don't think this is worthy of him being
cloned. You don't want to clone.
Second of all, I'm just going to tell you to your face, I don't believe that anything that you said actually occurred.
It did occur.
There's not one thing that you said after Vincent, are you familiar with Tyrone Hornay, that I believe actually happened.
I honestly.
Have you seen any of this?
I did. Now, admittedly.
I don't believe you.
I'm telling you. When I looked it up.
Uh-huh.
When I looked it up, I didn't remember.
You made it up?
I didn't make it up. When I looked it up, I didn't remember it. But then I looked at a still.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, okay, I kind of remember this.
Uh-huh.
And then I turned and so I went to YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of remember. It only lasted one season.
I think you got inceptioned.
I did not.
All right.
I was like, it was 1977. I was 10 years old.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It lasted one season.
Well, see, what channel was this on?
I didn't see what channel.
Uh-huh.
Based on
you know why?
Hush up. Based on the animation style, uh-huh, I would say that it was either NBC or CBS.
Okay.
No, because CBS was a lot of
Filmation. Yeah, CBS was Filmation.
So it probably was NBC because this was DePatie, the people that did Pink Panther, they did this.
Okay.
So I think that would have been NBC.
Okay.
But they also did like the Anna the Aardvark.
All right.
Yeah, it's that artistic style.
Okay. But no, I wouldn't clone
this time. You wouldn't clone that time, Rome?
I would not.
All right.
I don't even think this existed. So
He did exist. He did. All right. Here's another Tyrone.
Another Tyrone. All right.
Will you clone?
Okay.
Tyrone Biggums.
Tyrone Biggums.
From the Chappelle Show.
Yeah.
A squeaky voice crack addict.
Mm-hmm.
Recognized by his white blistered lips.
Yeah.
And his constant scratching.
Yeah.
He made his first appearance in the second episode of season one of the Chappelle Show. He is often heard saying, I smoke rocks. And Shazam.
Yeah, I don't think we need more crackheads.
Yeah, but do we need another Tyrone?
I don't think we do.
We don't need another Tyrone.
You were 0 for 2 of people that if I'm in charge of cloning, I'm not cloning Tyrone Biggums.
He was also featured in a segment, The World's Greatest Wars, where he was a cellmate of River Terrace crew leader General Cornrow Wallace, played by Mos Def.
Now, if you had said clone him, I would have said yes, because he's the most hilarious random character. Sometimes I think about him writing a letter telling them how to make crack. You must take the crack. Boil water. Let's see, go. When he ran away, he'd make noises. But no, I'm still not cloning.
You're not cloning Tyrone Biggums.
I'm not cloning Tyrone Biggums.
Okay, all right. All right, here we got another Tyrone, number 3.
Okay, number 3.
Count Tyrone Rugen.
Oh.
Are you familiar with this character?
I'm not, but he's a count. Or am I?
You are familiar with him because...
I know him as...
Count Tyrone Rugen is the secondary antagonist of the book and the film The Princess Bride. The count is is in the court of Prince Humperdinck. Rugen has a disturbing interest in the scientific study of pain and is a sadist, deriving pleasure from inflicting pain on others.
Yeah.
He's also born with postaxial polydactyly,
yeah,
giving him his memorable
six fingers. Yeah. Yeah.
Do we clone Count Tyrone Rugen?
We clone him only so, oh boy, this is not bode well for, Derville Martin. What's my man, Mandy Patinkin's character's name?
Oh, you're going to ask me that? I'm bad with the names.
Yeah.
But I know, but why are we cloning him?
So that he can kill him again.
Just so that he can kill him
again?
That's
you killed my father.
But he killed him.
And though. Now you die.
He wound up killing him.
I know, but he's such a good
character. Okay, and so let him go. He got his vengeance. Let him go live.
Let him go and live.
Why you got to have him go kill him all over again? Because, quiet as cap, he barely killed him.
Yeah.
I don't think you want to tempt fate again.
All right.
All right, so I'm with you on not cloning.
Don't clone him, all right.
Yeah. I would have cloned Tyrone Hornet.
If he existed.
We need superheroes.
Who we got next?
All right.
Him and the crackhead. You use it.
Number two. This is simply Tyrone.
Okay.
Who is a red-haired orange moose.
Okay.
From the Backyardigans.
Oh!
He's laid back and cool-headed.
Oh.
He's best friends with Pablo.
Yes, absolutely.
He's known for his sarcastic comments, one of them being, that certainly was convenient.
Yeah.
Despite not appearing to wear pants,
mm-hmm,
Tyrone somehow manages to put his hands in his pockets.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I had 2 Backyardigans kids. Yeah, my kids love the Backyardigans.
What?
Oh.
No, I definitely see... Really?
Oh.
I mean, I see Adam as Backyardigans, but...
Camille loved the Backyardigans.
I didn't think that was that old.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So 100% clone Tyrone.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Because I wasn't introduced to the Backyardigans to my grandson.
Yeah. Oh,
but
yeah.
I didn't know, realize they had been around that
oh,
long.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Now, I'm a unique woman. But we're talking about Tyrone's.
Well, we're talking about Tyrone's.
Right, but if I had to choose a Backyardigan to clone, it would be Uniqua.
It would be Uniqua.
Yeah, but I love
Which one is Uniqua?
She has the purple. She's a polka dot. She's polka dots. Polka because dot. She's unique. All of them are different animals, but then Uniqua is unique.
She's not an animal?
Well, she's unique.
Because she's just polka dot.
Right.
And I got to see the unique one. I'm pretty sure I know her.
Yeah.
Because it's Tyrone, who's the moose.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's Pablo, who I think is the penguin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Pablo's really cool.
Then there's the rabbit.
It's right.
Who always got on my nerves. So I don't care about
like
his
Austin.
Name. And then there's the hippo.
Right. And that's.
That's a girl as well.
I just forgot her.
I don't think the Backyardigans is going to do you in.
Yeah.
Or Derville Martin.
Yeah. But yeah, I love Tyrone.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta look up Uniqua. Oh, Uniqua was kind of like the buggy looking, like alienish. Oh, okay. Oh yeah, I do like her.
Tasha.
Tasha is the hippo. Yeah, I like Tasha.
Oh, the backyardigans are solid gold.
Yeah.
Absolute solid gold.
Here's the thing. Yeah. I like the backyardigans. Mm-hmm. I love the backyardigans. My first time watching my grandson, he loved the backyardigans. Mm-hmm. And that's how I was introduced to him. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, I'm here. Mm-hmm. I'm here for them. I'm good. The next time I watched my grandson, he was into those those superhero ones, the PJ Masks.
Yeah,
I could do without the PJ Masks. Yeah. They quickly got on my nerves.
You can always tell what is the product of corporate synergy, and what is the product of, you know, the love, basically.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we're cloning that time.
Oh, absolutely.
Very good. All right. So now the last, final one.
Tyrone.
Are we cloning the Tyrone of Erykah Badu's Tyrone?
You know what? That Tyrone gets a bad rap because people talk like Tyrone is not the piece of man that she's dating. Tyrone is just a good friend.
Exactly. Exactly. I wonder, so we're cloning Tyrone.
Absolutely. Tyrone is a good friend.
Everybody needs a Tyrone.
Right. It's like, not to take it there, but quite frankly, that's who Erykah Badu should have been dating.
Well, we don't know that.
Look, Tyrone's...
But we don't learn that much about Tyrone.
Look, we know Tyrone has a phone. We know Tyrone has
a bar here.
A car.
He's got a phone in the car.
But he's cleared the bar that the dude that she's talking to can't clear.
Okay, fair enough.
You can't use my phone. You never have money to get me in places, or to get yourself in places. You want to hang out with stars and bring your boys with them. You know, Tyrone want to be up in the spot, which I can understand. Tyrone is fine.
Tyrone's a good dude.
Tyrone sounds like a good dude.
Everybody should have a Tyrone.
Right.
Every guy should have a Tyrone. Every woman should have a Tyrone.
Pro Tyrone.
I was wondering which way you want to leave it.
I feel like Erykah Badu needs to make better choices about who she dates.
Mm-hmm.
But Tyrone is fine.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we are pro cloning that Tyrone.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, as long as we landed there, I'm good.
Okay. There you go.
All right. That's our top five, ladies and gentlemen.
All right.
2 out of 5 ain't bad.
2 out of 5 ain't bad.
All right. Now it's time for the Game of Kings.
Game of Kings.
As we go 6 degrees into Dervell Martin. Six Degrees of Dervell Martin, ladies and gentlemen, where Vincent has 6 actors or less to connect the actors that I give him to Dervell Martin.
All right.
Superstar of 70s films.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right, Vincent. Keeping this in theme.
Okay.
This is a theme. I'm trying to remember what the theme was.
Here we go. You the one with access to Google and prep time.
I forget what the theme.
Sure.
Because I'm looking at the two names. I'm like,
Come on, just give me the name. You just give me the name. And then you figure out why you picked them. Come on. Just reach into a hat. You just sit somewhere eating chicken McNuggets and writing names down. Mm-hmm. I mean, you already made up a cartoon, so. Give me the name. Come on, just give me the name. Who was it?
In 6 films or less, connect Dervell Martin
to
Sam Rockwell.
How is Sam Rockwell connected to any of this at all?
I can't remember how.
Is it because Rockwell is also the name of Barry Gordy's son who had this song, "I Always Feel Like Somebody's Watching Me"? And is that how you connect? Because now it's paranoia. Is that it, maybe? I'm not going to do your job. I'll try and do my job. Sam Rockwell is in a bunch of stuff, but I'm embarrassed to say that the only thing that I really think about Sam Rockwell in is Charlie's Angels.
Really?
I know.
Of all the movies?
You know what?
There's one.
I don't know why I like Charlie's Angels as much as I do, but
the first one?
Yes. I love that stupid movie.
It's a stupid movie.
It's a stupid movie, but you know what? Dervil Martin is in Dolomite with Rudy Ray Moore. Rudy Ray Moore is in Penitentiary 2 with Ernie Hudson. Ernie Hudson is in Ghostbusters with Bill Murray. And Bill Murray is in Charlie's Angels with Sam Rockwell.
Very good, Vincent.
Do you remember why you picked Sam Rockwell up?
Can't remember.
Nothing. No, you just picked out a name. Pick out a name.
No.
Look at the freak. The freak will figure it out. There's no real respect for what I do, huh, Lynn?
It has something. It has something to do with the type of film.
Right, right. If only you had time to think about it and didn't have to do it. Like, it's not like you have to do it in real time with a bunch of people watching as we tape it, and it's going to be sitting there in perpetuity.
Why?
And much like Michael, somebody 2 years from now is going to start listening to the Michelle Mission and say, I'm working through the archives, and now they're going to be listening to this. It's not like I have that kind of pressure. Who's next? Who we got? Come on. Who we got?
All right.
Come on. Come on.
In 6 films or less. Connect Dervil Martin to. Well, let me go here. Natasha Henstridge.
Boy, I don't know what your theme was, but your theme may have been people that Vince is a little embarrassed that he knows about.
Are you serious?
No. Because she's another one that I'm sure has been in lots of stuff. But let's be clear. The only reason I know who she is because she was in Mimic.
Was she?
I think that's her deal, isn't it?
No. She's not a Mimic.
Let me see her face. I could have swore she was the Mimic woman. I think she's in Mimic.
I think the movie you're thinking of, you're saying the wrong title.
No, you're right. It's not Mimic. It's the other butt-naked white woman movie. You're 100% right. I'm mixing up my sci-fi butt-naked white woman movies. It's not Mimic. It is Species, though.
There you go.
She's in Species.
Yes.
Now, I do have a question for you about Species.
Who else is in it?
No. Well, kind of. Who plays the gruff black general? Is that Lawrence Fishburne or Forrest Whitaker?
Whitaker.
Okay. All right. Because I knew it was gruff black general who was real gruff about all of it. And don't be fooled by this naked alien white woman. She gonna kill all of us.
All as right. White women are meant to,
alien mimic ones are that come to mate with human beings.
And naked earth white women.
So Dervil Martin. So how did, it's funny because we just finished talking about this movie. Because Dervil Martin is in Five on a Black Handsaw with Leonard Jackson. Mm-hmm. Leonard Jackson is in Boomerang with Robin Givens. Robin Givens is in A Rage in Harlem.
With?
Forrest Whitaker.
Who?
Who is in Species.
With?
I don't even, Natasha Henstridge?
Henstridge.
Yeah, yeah. Species, did you ever see Species?
No.
It is way better than it had to be.
What about the sequel?
I know I saw the sequels and don't remember a thing about them. Mm. But Species is a surprisingly good film.
I remember the trailer being looking like really good.
Yeah, like they really just kind of cut out the middleman, like the subtext of sex in Aliens and stuff from Alien. And they just said, let's just go ahead and get a skinny blonde white woman to make her the alien. Mm-hmm. But it was surprisingly good.
See, it's sci-fi, but it's sci-fi horror. And I'm just not really that.
I was just
surprised you saw it.
You know, I'm an alien dude.
Yeah, but it is horror.
I mean, Alien is horror.
I know. I guess.
Yeah. Sci-fi horror. Alien. Like Alien, kind of whatever it is. It's so funny. I saw somebody posting on Twitter who watched Alien for the first time. It was doing like real time reaction to Alien.
Oh yeah.
And it made me want to go watch Alien again, which I think has just had a 4K restoration or something. Yeah.
I mean, it's worth returning to. It's a good
look, man. Like the reason I know is because I own Alien in like four different formats. You know, I love Alien.
Do you need it in four different formats?
Look, every time it comes out, it's like on.
What is new?
Just the clarity of the print.
Vincent,
I know.
Your eyes ain't getting no better.
No, that's right.
Stop fooling yourself, bro.
I got some wood to knock on. I'm not wearing glasses yet, but yeah, but you're right about that.
I have that VHS and just watch yourself some Alien. Spin this bowl.
So have you figured out how they connected?
No, I can't remember.
Was Sam Rockwell a clone in anything?
That's what it was. They were clones in movies. They were clones in movies. That's what it was. They were clones in movies.
Because he was in, what was that, Moon? Or what was he?
Moon.
Moon, which I didn't see, but I heard good things about.
Oh, Moon is fantastic. Yeah.
And what was she a clone in?
Well, I think, isn't she kind of like a clone in Species?
So Species, you were thinking of the same movie I was thinking of.
We figured it out. That's what it was. They were clones in movies.
Oh, we figured it out? Is that what we did?
Yes, I thought we were a team.
Yes, so we figured it out. There you go.
Wow. All right, ladies and gentlemen. After this break, I guess Vince will be here. Reviewing They Clone Tyrone. I'm going to go to the restroom. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with our movie review after we step to these messages.
Everything okay in there, baby?
Where the money at?
I'm an entrepreneur. I work in the spirit of the pimp game.
You know your girl gotta know what's going on in these streets.
Yo, get off me.
That's the car right there.
This bitch.
Slick, come on.
That make your spider senses tingle.
What kind of shit is this?
Like I'm in the Twilight Zone.
Don't let the back door hit you.
We gotta go.
I don't know what that was, but that wasn't me.
Somebody is conducting experiments on us.
Grape Dragon, come the fuck out.
This our homeland. We don't do nothing about it, nobody will.
Chill. Just fucking chill.
shit.
What is motherfucker did?
Okay, we ain't got no time for no negativity. Go give me some goddamn wet nap. Stumbling through my.
You keep your pimp hand raised.
Oh, God, no!
And be willing to protect the ones you love by any means necessary.
I ain't scared. I'm a dope boy, remember?
Excuse me, kind sir, but if you could pull me to the elevator that leads down to the Fiki laboratory,
don't let the back door hit you.
I'll be out your atmosphere.
Let's get it, man.
We're on the scene trying to figure out what has happened.
IG, this shit fucked up. They out here cloning this. What the fuck going on in this bitch?
That's right. That is the prevailing theory.
They cloned Tyrone, a 2023 American science fiction comedy mystery directed by Jewel Taylor in his feature film directorial debut from a screenplay that he wrote with Tony Rittenmeyer. It stars John Boyega, Tiana Paris, and Jamie Foxx as an unlikely trio uncovering a shadow government cloning conspiracy. In supporting roles, this film also features the work of David Alan Greer and Kiefer Sutherland. In Vincent's selection for this stop in Octavia April on the Michelle Mission, Vincent, what say you of They Cloned Tyrone?
Well, if you have watched a fair number of black movies and certainly black movies since the 90s, you know, sort of the post John Singleton hood era films, They Clone Tyrone starts out in a very straightforward fashion where, you know, it's a little boy named Junebug and he's on a bike and he's looking for one of the local thugs, Fontaine. And when he finds Fontaine is lifting weights in the yard with his homies. And, you know, come to find out that Fontaine, as he describes himself at one point, is a dope boy. You know, he's a drug dealer. He's a hustler. And much like these drug dealers and hustlers, he has a drug dealer hustler life where he has enemies and rivals for territory. You know, very early on, he gets into a scuffle with another dealer that's in his territory. He goes and he drinks 40s and he has scratch offs, does a little scratch off. And, you know, like a lot of thugs, he got a heart of gold, though. He loved his mama. You know, we don't see her, but he loved his mama. And we know this because he makes sandwiches for her and leaves her. And in the midst of
and he loved kids.
You know, he has a soft spot for Junebug. And in the midst of this day, he has to go and kind of get payment for services rendered. And, you know, come to find out that a local pimp, Slick Charles, played by Jamie Foxx, owes him money. And at one point, you know, he goes to get his money from Slick Charles. On the way, he bumps into one of Slick Charles's hoes, Yo-Yo, played by Tiana Paris. Goes in, roughs up Slick Charles, gets his money, comes out, but one of these rivals has come to get him, blocks him in. Fontaine gets out the car, is immediately shot three times, falls back into the car. Rival comes up, finishes the job, finishes and murders Fontaine. This is in the first 15 minutes of the movie.
Yep.
And then Fontaine wakes up. And you realize that there's something else going on. There is a bit of a mystery. Now, this bit of the mystery, it seems pretty straightforward if you know the title of the film. But besides that, I think this is a film that really operates and comments on two themes that you see in black culture. One, a little metatextual, one a little bit more pointedly political.
Okay.
To kind of frame the metatextual one, just want to share a couple of statistics from my notes.
man brought receipts.
I did. So the Washington Post had an article in 2014, which talked about social dynamics in America. Mm-hmm. And the takeaway stat from this article was that 3/4 of white people in the United States, 3 out of 4 white people, do not have any black friends. Around the same time, there was a survey that talked about neighborhoods in the United States. It's about 2014, 2015. The Bloomberg Review did. And it said that approximately 12% of the neighborhoods in the United States are what you could actually call integrated.
Okay. Wow.
And the metrics that they used was that a neighborhood would have to have at least 10% of another race living there for you to say that is an integrated neighborhood.
Oh, and it's only 12%?
About 12%, which means that 88% of us live in homogeneous neighborhoods. And then Time had an article in 2021 where they don't have any stats necessarily, but they say that neighborhoods are becoming more and more segregated. Although there are no actual interior stats for what I'm about to say, I think it is fair to kind of extrapolate that when you kind of adjust for education and income, those numbers are even worse. Mm-hmm. In other words, the more money you make as a white person, the higher your educational stats as a white person, you're even less likely to know any black people.
Yeah.
This is important because when we think about creators in popular culture, writers of television, writers of movies, the makers of video games, everything that we talk about, statistically, what we know is that the images that we see of black people are created by and large by people who do not know any black people. They just sort of know what they saw, kind of this. And you and I kind of talk about it all the time. Like, we have this running joke about names that black characters have that white people, you know, it's Lincoln Obsidian Washington Jackson, who smokes Newports and loves real hard on his ladies. But there's something kind of fantastical about that, mm-hmm. where you have these characters who are fully the product of this white imagination.
White imagination, white gaze.
And just from what I just said, the early part of this film, even before you get into the cloning and everything, like Fontaine, Slick Charles, Yo-Yo, Biddy, Junebug. Mm-hmm. These are all names and creations that aren't real. And one of the things that you see throughout this film is how these artificial people kind of struggle to try to become real people.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that you see, and this is something that we struggle with a lot, I think, post the pandemic, is the dynamic of how we deal with conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of conspiracies,
a lot of conspiracies.
Know, and you know, vaccines don't work. We didn't go to the moon. All of these different things. But I think when you are black, it's a little bit more complicated than just saying you don't believe in conspiracies, because the FBI did infiltrate the civil rights movement and destabilize it. They did blackmail Dr. King because of his infidelities. They did try to push him to commit suicide. They did infiltrate the Black Panthers and set up this warfare between them and murdered Fred Hampton. They did hire the very first African-American FBI agent to infiltrate Marcus Garvey's organization, mm-hmm. and frame him so that he could get deported. Like, this all really happened. They did have up this site where they experimented on these black men and didn't treat them for syphilis in Tuskegee, Alabama. Mm-hmm. Like, all of this did happen. So that when black people believe in conspiracies, it's a different sort of thing where, you know, your white uncle might tell you that the earth is flat. And you can say, okay, the earth is flat. But I grew up in Baltimore. And my black uncle told me, you got to be real easy with Hopkins. Because Johns Hopkins does not do well with black people. Mm-hmm. And you got to be real careful with what they do with your with when they treat you and so on and so forth. And this was decades.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before many of us knew who Henrietta Lacks was and how Hopkins harvested her blood.
Mm-hmm.
So this film also kind of plays around with the notion of what if black people's beliefs about conspiracy theories are true? And these are these big, heady kind of concepts that you see in They Clone Tyrone, where this sort of this existential question of what makes a person, right, and then this sort of political, what is a conspiracy, mm, and what does this really mean? And the thing about a high concept project is that it can oftentimes come off as just kind of a thought experiment, and it doesn't really stand as an actual piece of art. Unless it's grounded in performances. And the smartest thing this film does is put this film on the shoulders of these three actors. You know, Tiana Paris, Jamie Foxx, John Boyega. Tiana Paris's Yo-Yo is fantastic. And it's not surprising. Like you and I are long, well-documented fans of Tiana Paris. She has great presence. She's a wonderful actress. She has great comedic timing. Mm-hmm. She's actually funny. Mm-hmm. And as someone who has to be the main comedic foil to Jamie Foxx, who is legitimately a genius at this, she holds her own. Jamie Foxx as Slick Charles DePimp. I think Jamie Foxx is someone that it's almost like I talk about Stevie Wonder during the 70s, where he's so good you kind of take him for granted a lot of times. Yep. And you know, quite honestly, this film could have worked if he just kind of played Slick Charles as a live action version of a pimp named Slickback from the Boondocks. But this is Jamie Foxx. So while 80% of it is kind of doing this quick dialogue and everything. And, you know, and I have to say, I think this is a film you have to watch more than once because it's so dense.
Yeah.
And at least one the times you have to have
absence
the subtitles on. A lot of reason you need the subtitles on is because Jamie Foxx is so damn funny. You miss half of what he's saying the first time. But there are moments in this film where they ask him to embody this character as a person. And he absolutely rises to the task where again, Slick Charles begins as something out of Grand Theft Auto, but he's a person. And Jamie Foxx executes this beautifully. And then you have John Boyega. And, you know, talking about something that we have talked about many times in the past, I think you want to talk about systemic racism in Hollywood in the past 10 years. I think John Boyega is my poster child for it. Because the way Hollywood has treated John Boyega is an absolute crime. When you think about everything that he showed from Attack the Block, and then his work over here has just been nothing. John Boyega is soulful. John Boyega embodies this kind of rage. John Boyega has this wonderful humanity. Like, John Boyega is sort of the reason you care by the time this thing is over. And having said all that, it's also damn funny.
Oh, it's hilarious.
It's also hilarious. So, you know, I think this film is a triumph. I think this film is an absolute triumph. I think we, as Black science fiction nerds, the past 10 years have fed us well. Black Panther, Sorry to Bother You, mm-hmm. Swan Song, mm-hmm. Get Out, Us. And I think They Clone Tyrone sits very easily in that number.
Yeah. I think, to be fair, in regards to John Boyega, you know, and his career and Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
he does Attack the Block in 2011. He does a couple of movies in between, but by 2015, he's on the Star Wars.
Yes.
So he quickly is, you know, now say what you want about how Lucasfilm treated him,
mm-hmm.
but he is quickly in one of the big movies or three of the big movies for the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, the money's good.
Okay.
But they fritter his talent.
Well, they may have frittered his talent, but you know, you've got that money, you've got that bag.
Mm-hmm.
So now you can be a little bit more selective about the roles that you do, which
okay, I
like to think that he probably has been more so than Hollywood, you know, maybe sticking him around. He was lucky enough to get that right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's trying to pick and choose his films from there. But like I said it a few weeks ago, this is my favorite film of last year.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. It's funny. It is definitely timely in its commentary.
Mm-hmm.
I love, you know, you talk about how it's got like the 90s film aesthetic, but it almost is if it's a 90s hood film as if it was a 70s film,
mm-hmm.
with that kind of aesthetic,
mm-hmm.
to it, even some of the production trappings to it, because there are moments in the film where Jules Taylor actually puts in like the little like a couple of scratches in the film and stuff, uh-huh. to let you think like, you know, you're watching this in the movie theater.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So, and even just the soundtrack of this movie is so great, but the way that it is layered in, mm-hmm. to this movie, when I was listening to the soundtrack is great, but when I was just listening to the way that it was layered in, it was like, oh, this is what people want Superfly to be,
mm-hmm.
because Superfly is such a great soundtrack, and it doesn't match the scenes,
mm-hmm.
right? This, everything clicks, everything like flows, man. And it shifts because it jumps into way back, you know, a little bit, but then still have contemporary songs as well. You know, I mean, they even had Albie Shore in there. Like, Albie Shore in the background. What was all that?
I have a theory about that.
If it's theory about Albie Shore, okay.
Not Albie Shore, but the music.
Okay. Well, mm-hmm. I definitely think there is, it is intentional,
mm-hmm.
in how the music is, how everything is played out in this. And you're right. It's a movie that rewards on rewatching because the script is so dense and like great films. Even the shots are filled with little Easter eggs. Mm-hmm. If you know where to look in the background, mm-hmm. you know, taking pieces from other film universes and putting them in this movie. It is so good. But you're right. With all that being said, and this is Jules Taylor's directorial debut.
Crazy.
That's insane that this is his debut. The film is 2 hours long. 2 hours long. There's some argument. Is it a little bit too long? I honestly didn't feel the length as that bad.
I don't feel it at all.
And this was my third time watching the film.
Yeah.
So I was still rock solid with it. But it all is on these performances.
Mm-hmm.
It is all on the performances of Tiana Paris. And I'm going to say Tiana Paris and Jamie Foxx together, because them together, I want to see a movie with those two. Love. I want to see the movie with those two are just a couple on the run. They could redo War of the Roses. Like, yeah. I just want to see those two. I'm looking in the background of the film, learned that they improvised a lot of their.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, my God. They need to do a movie together. They were so spot on. I'm totally in the bag for Tiana Paris. Huge fan of Jamie Foxx. And they are two great tastes that taste great together.
Mm-hmm.
It was and it was smart, because like you said, the film works if they just play it the characters as they're written, Slick Charles and Yo-Yo. But because the movie, and because this is the point of the movie, is that these characters, who are typically stereotypes as created by the man,
mm-hmm.
are struggling to become actual human, full-fledged, fully felt individuals,
mm-hmm.
You feel that fight through, you know, the ignorance that has been laid upon them, you mm-hmm. know? You know, Yo-Yo, you know, wanting to basically be like the girl detective that she read, you know, the Nancy Drew stories, right? You know?
Wait, but you said this bitch have.
Right. And Slick Charles, as much as he's trying to be, he wants to be a pimp, and he sees himself as a pimp, and, you know, I won pimp of the year in 1995. But he actually is still really... He's a good dude.
Yeah.
And who actually seems to take care of his women. Care about them,
yeah.
right?
Oh, yeah.
So you're like, he's always fighting that. The thug is fighting the love for his mom and looking out for Junebug, all because of, you know, this memory of how he lost his brother, stuff like that. And you feel for them. You feel for what they're going through, and you feel for they each have a moment where you're like, oh man. And the moment, and the one that hits you the hardest, or the one that hit me the hardest, is when John Boyega realizes the truth about his mother.
Yeah.
And that is a hard pill to swallow, man. Because that rocks your world, because now you don't know what's going on.
Right.
You don't know what you do. We have absolutely what's going on. And as I was watching it this third time, I'm realizing, oh, he's found out the truth about his mother. That maybe some other people are finding out truths about their people. Ugh. Because Yo-Yo keep mentioning about a grandmother.
You never see her grandmother.
You
That's
know?
Right.
So,
although I don't think Yo-Yo is a clone.
Apparently, because she's not important enough.
Right. So,
because she ain't nothing but a hoe.
So, right.
But still.
Yeah.
The commentary on Black life in this movie, that is there every step of the way, from the beginning of the movie
mm-hmm.
all the way to the absolute end of the movie,
mm-hmm.
which is when you meet Tyrone.
Yeah.
You don't meet Tyrone to the end of the movie.
Yeah.
The commentary on the Black urban experience and the circular nature of it was so spot on that this film had me seeing Big Clone Tyrone in real life. And I tell you this because I don't know if you had this in your cities, ladies and gentlemen, but there's this phenomenon that seems to be taking over in Philadelphia
mm-hmm.
called hot chicken.
That seems like it came out of nowhere.
Came out of nowhere, right?
Yeah.
And there's a hot chicken in West O'Lane. There's a hot chicken in West Philly. There's a hot chicken in South Philly.
Yeah.
There is a billboard for a hot chicken coming soon around my way.
Yeah.
And they're all different franchises.
Yeah.
But they're advertising hot chicken.
Right, right.
And dog, if I didn't start looking for Kiefer Sutherland outside my window.
Look.
I was like, yo, this that bullshit.
Well, I think the brilliance of the way they deal with conspiracies is that every single conspiracy that they kind of address in this film has been part of sort of black folklore or, you know, at least since we were teenagers. Yeah. Like, did they talk about Church's Chicken in Philly?
Mm-hmm.
It was all, you know, oh, they trying to control, you know, you got to watch Church's Chicken.
Mm-hmm.
40s. There were always conspiracies about the 40s. And speaking of other franchises, probably worth noting, one of the Easter eggs is that the malt liquor that they drink in this film is Anaconda malt liquor. Mm-hmm. The malt liquor that makes you go, woo-wee. And that's from Black Dynamite.
Yes.
And apparently
with
Joel.
Permission.
Right, because Joel Taylor loved Black Dynamite so much.
Right.
He called Michael Jai White and asked to use Anaconda malt liquor.
Right.
But the malt liquor is all part of the government control through the music. There's always been conspiracy that, you know, kind of the music industry has government operatives in it. Perms being part of it.
Dude, the scene in the hair salon when girlfriend is getting you know, the perm in her hair, and she's talking about dealing with stuff, talking like, oh my God, these bills, and the dude's getting on my nerves, and as that perm starts laying in, she's like, maybe I'm tripping.
Look,
maybe, dude,
the role of religion in pacifying people. Like, so which we should mention. David Alan Greer is in one scene.
Yes, we really want a scene. Yeah,
oh boy, he
makes the most of it.
Like, look, I'm gonna be here. I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
That's right.
You get David Alan Greer for 4 minutes. You better use them right.
And they used them right.
Yeah.
Yes, they did.
Yeah,
they did, man.
And Kiefer Sutherland. I know. How good is he?
I know. And I love that they use Kiefer Sutherland, because Kiefer Sutherland, who historically, as a younger actor, was like a villain in tons of movies.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it was right around as he got a little older, and he did 24, the TV show.
I was about to say, you think about 24.
And he's all of a sudden, Kiefer Sutherland became like the everyman hero for a minute. And now to see him leaning back into his little jerkdom. Oh, it was so
but I love how charming he was.
Because he's Kiefer Sutherland.
Right, right. Like, I love, you know, I love the fact that, you know, I don't know who his mom is, but apparently that was just enough DNA to kind of mask that kind of serpentine reptile quality that Donald Sutherland always has.
He is his father, yeah.
But the mask drops.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, wow, this is such a great character. Again, more scenes than David Alan Greer, but it's like, what? You get two scenes? I mean, maybe three if you count when he talks to Yo-Yo.
Yeah, the end.
Right. You get three scenes with Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah.
And he kind of builds this wonderful character.
Yeah.
The script is amazing.
The script is amazing. Now, I will, to be fair, if you, like a lot of films.
Mm-hmm.
And even some of the best films, if you sit with it a little bit, some parts of it don't really make a lot of sense.
Okay.
You know, because there's a whole idea that they go to a house early on in the movie that is where they discover like this lab.
Right.
You know, and then they go back to that house.
And it's all walled up.
It's all walled
up. And everything's gone.
Well, if it's all walled up and it's gone because they know that they were in the house, then why didn't they deal with them at that time?
Because, A, Kiefer Sutherland's character says it, Fontaines are expensive.
Yes.
So you can't just willy-nilly be replacing Fontaines, A. Which you have to assume, you know, slight spoiler, I guess, Slick Charles's are also expensive.
Well, he says that they are expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They completely underestimate Yo-Yo.
Well.
And who Yo-Yo is.
Again, that the white man underestimating right. the black woman.
And if this is our kind of lab, you kind of keep lab specimens as much as you can. I bought that part because early on I bought, as the film goes on, and you know, at one point Kiefer Sutherland even kind of lampshades it where he says, I should have killed you the first time. He's like, well, I should have killed you the second time. It's like, yeah, at this point it was kind of plot armor, mm-hmm. like at one point, but you know.
Yeah, but it's one of those things. If you're enjoying what's happening,
yeah,
and you're enjoying spending time with the characters, you're along for the ride.
Yeah. And to your point, by the end, not just the actors, but these characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would love whatever kind of Brinks truck you have to use to back up to their houses. You have one or two They Clone Tyrone movies every couple of years, and they kind of go from city to city and do different things. I mean, so there's no way it's going to happen. But, like, I love these characters.
Yeah, I enjoy them.
And I love them together. And I love, you know, all of it. And again, the density of the plot. Oh, my God. So my theory about the music is that they kind of kept the technological advances kind of low, like always 5 or 6 years behind. Like, I think they were trying to control what kind of information got yeah. into the Glen.
Yeah, yeah.
Like at one point, Yo-Yo, who is, of course, Yo-Yo, where she references blockchain and cryptocurrency, like, she makes the most kind of current comment.
Reference, yeah.
Reference. But the rest of them, like they're listening to music from the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess they couldn't keep out the fact that we had a black president, because at one point Slick Charles says something about Barack Obama. But, you know, they're watching VHS tapes. They're using flip phones.
Yeah.
The televisions look all old. Mm-hmm. And I just got the sense so that's why, they're playing I'll Be Sure and all this other stuff. And the new music that they played was their music.
Right.
The mind control music.
Well, yeah.
Right. The only they played one current song, and I meant to write the artist down. But when Fontaine has that crisis of faith and learns about his mother.
Yes.
They play kind of a current song that's not Ruckus,
mm-hmm.
which I assume even that is a reference to Uncle Ruckus. You know, all these sort of touchstones in here.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to shout out one other actor that was in this film. Not a big role.
Mm-hmm.
And another one, if you start thinking about it, like, you know, he probably should have been in there a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And that was J. Alphonse Nicholson,
mm-hmm.
plays Isaac.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because when he does show up, he definitely has a presence.
Do you watch P-Valley?
I've seen a couple episodes.
Isn't he on P-Valley?
Perhaps. I haven't watched enough to know.
Yeah, I haven't watched it, but I've heard nothing but good things about it. And when people talk about it, they talk about him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I agree with you. He was very good.
Very good.
In a little bit of time that he's on there.
Yeah.
So I also assume he was a clone.
We assume so. We don't know.
Right, right. But, you know, even that notion that there are certain people in the community that are kind of agents just to keep things messed up. The
thought leaders.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot when you start thinking about it, man.
Yeah.
And like I said, start thinking about it and you start looking in your neighborhood, ladies and gentlemen. Looking at these daycares a little differently.
Look, man, right now they're putting together a class action suit about these perms making women sick. You know, different cancers and things going on. And there was always... You know, Lynn and I are men of a certain age. Mm. But yeah, if you were a young dude in the 90s and you hung out with 5 percenters and dudes in the Nation of Islam and the Nubian Islamic Hebrews and the Black Israelites,
mm-hmm.
and you was always, you know, people talking about different things that was going on. And again, the 90s was 5-6 years away from crack, which even at the time, you know, that we use, oh, Iran-Contras and this, but they were funneling crack.
I know.
Into the black. Like, these aren't conspiracies. These aren't, this is just the truth.
Yeah, calling them conspiracies is doing them a disservice.
Right.
Like, these are just facts.
Right. Like, I wish we could talk about mystery moon bases or the Loch Ness Monster.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, when you're black, you got to talk about this kind of stuff.
I know. See, and white people, they want their own conspiracy. So they make up conspiracy.
Right. And I wish I could spend time talking about reptilian shape changers. Like, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
That's a fun conspiracy.
But no, I got to get this church's chicken out of my neighborhood.
You know they're using the church's chicken to control your mind. Like, oh, that sounds crazy.
And why is there a liquor store on two corners and a daycare on the other two corners?
So daycares are now part of it?
Oh.
Daycares are now part?
Oh.
Like, I like the cut of your jib, because you done brought up hot chicken and daycares.
Stop. Have you noticed all these daycares, man? It's like Kentucky Fried Daycare out here. Where's the daycare?
Link got his ear to the streets.
People don't even buy houses anymore. They just, what are you doing? I'm bought a daycare.
I'm just holding up.
Open a daycare. Safe. Dude, in Mount Airy, they changed an auto garage into like the world's largest daycare.
Oh, I'm laughing, but I'm not laughing that hard. Yeah.
Jesus.
And then the film ends, and Erykah Badu changes her song.
Well, she had to.
I mean, she ain't had to. She Erykah Badu, she don't have to do nothing.
Well, the check cleared, so yeah. She had to. But
it was a chef's kiss.
Chef's kiss right there.
And then it ends with, and you know they tapping our phones.
And they are.
Yeah.
Daycare.
And they're feeding them hot chicken. How do you feel about hot chicken?
I refuse.
You refuse it?
I refuse to eat.
I went to Nashville once. It was really good in Nashville.
But so what? Okay, what is hot chicken? Because every place I've gone to buy chicken, except the supermarket,
mm-hmm.
the chicken has been hot.
Yeah.
But it's not hot chicken.
It's not temperature hot. It's spice hot.
Okay, so it's spicy.
Yeah. And it's a Nashville thing.
Oh, so this phenomenon started in Nashville. So
yeah.
Nashville is to blame, Toya.
I mean, it was delicious in Nashville. Like, I can't speak for all the mystery ones popping up now, but.
So it is a thing? So is it just a chicken sandwich?
No. It's like pieces of chicken.
So fried chicken.
Yeah, and then it's like. Don't get me to lie about how it's made. I know Tabasco sauce is involved.
But is it like baked into the
Right. So it's right.
So it's not like a sauce that's on it. It's no. baked in.
Right.
Okay. All right. Yeah, no, I'm gonna be eating that.
All right, that's fair.
I'm good.
I'm not pushing none here.
Good.
But if you're in Nashville, you get some hot chicken.
No, I'm not. If I'm going to Nashville, I'm getting some barbecue.
Okay, fair enough.
No hot chicken. Nobody goes to Nashville for hot chicken.
Okay, easy. Get all that bass out your voice. I'm not trying to have no problems with the Nashville.
We don't have no problem with the Nashville. Yo, scenario. Do y'all eat hot chicken or barbecue?
Okay.
Let me know, Van.
Let the record show Vince likes hot chicken in Nashville.
I'm not saying this, but you don't go to Nashville for hot chicken.
Easy inside, boys.
I am inside.
All right.
This is how I talk inside.
All right.
Are you going to recommend they clone Tyrone?
Absolutely.
So am I.
I think this is a film that rewards multiple. I mean, we haven't even mentioned there's a whole storyline going on in the background of this film. With someone, you know,
the young lady
looking for a sister, yeah,
from the beginning of the film, yeah.
I
gets a whole arc,
yeah. I use this as a text in my class this term.
Nice,
yeah. So this is actually my fourth time watching, and I pull things out each time. Like the whole Michael Jackson arc in this thing is like every little detail matters.
It does.
Yeah. So yeah, I absolutely would recommend it.
Yeah.
And you?
Oh, most certainly. Most certainly. I would recommend They Clone Tyrone. It is a film that rewards, like Vincent said, on repeat watching. It's some of Jamie Foxx's best work in a little bit.
In a long time. Yeah, I agree.
And John Boyega, Tiana Paris, and a fantastic debut for Joel Taylor.
Yeah.
I'll be looking for the next work from this young man. Absolutely exceptional. A beautiful film.
Well done.
Well done. Well done. So, yes, They Cloned Tyrone. Check it out, ladies and gentlemen. Streaming on Netflix. Free plug.
Mm-hmm.
Go check it out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Netflix is a utility. You know you got it.
So. That's what I hear.
All right. Next week, ladies and gentlemen, it's the fifth week of April, which means one more week of Octavia April.
Woo-hoo!
Before we tell you what we're going to be reviewing next week, I invite you to send us all of your thoughts. Email us at michaumission@gmail.com. That's michaumission@gmail.com. Or you can find us on all the social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, @MeShowMission. And if you're watching us on YouTube, and you know you are, hit that bell, subscribe to the show on YouTube. Hit the bell so you're notified when we put up new videos, when we go live as well. And tell a friend to subscribe to the Me Show Mission on YouTube. We go live every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. right here from Yunk Junk, Philadelphia's premier video podcast palace here in Manayunk. If you want to book yourself into one of the fabulous studios that they have here, you can email our man Dylan at yunkjunk.com. That's D-Y-L-A-N at yunkjunk.com. The Michelle Mission is a proud member of The Podglomerate, thepodglomerate.com. They make podcasts work, such as ours, which will be teaming up with the Be Real Black Cinema Club for the Be Real Michelle screening series, returning to Bryn Mawr Film Institute on Thursday, June 13th, for our screening of The Five Heartbeats. Tickets are on sale right now at BrynMawrFilm.org. We want to see each and every one of you in that beautiful theater. Race off pretzels.
Mm-hmm.
Next week.
Yeah.
In the fifth week of Octavia April.
Yeah.
We are giving a film its just due.
Oh, yeah.
As Tiana Paris returns.
Once again.
Joining us. Fighting alongside Captain Marvel, Miss Marvel. It is Marvel's The Marvels.
The Marvels.
Next week, here on The Michaud Mission. Until then, he's Vincent, I'm Len, and in parting, we say,
we'll see you when it's time to meet again.
The Michaud Mission is produced by Len Webb and Vincent Williams, with co-production by Mo Poplar. Check out Mo's family travel podcast, Bun Amigos, at ashyfeet.com. Original music is provided by Alexa Gold. Visit Alexa Gold Music at Bandcamp for more of her melodies. The Michaud Mission is edited by Len Webb and produced for YouTube at Yunk Junk. Visit Dylan at yunkjunk.com for more information.